Good afternoon, and a point of correction. Good Friday afternoon, and welcome to Home Run with Helm and Dwight on Eagle FM. I'm back again, this time with Dwight. It's a Home Run, of course. So it's your drive time show. It's if you only work Monday to Friday like I do, then this is your last drive time for the week. And so here to keep you company, and of course until the hour of six. And you must be exhausted after having a long day at work. And well, that's the exhaustion part. That means you need energy. If you are, you know, sipping in some caffeine or anything that gets you boosted up, whether it's if it's the illegal while you are driving kind, then we don't recommend it. But the energy discussion is what we are going to be talking about today, albeit energy in terms of industrial and household use, not the energy that gets you moving. That is aka electricity. You need some, but not out of the socket. That's a bad idea.
And what they call that thing? It's unsafe, basically. It's a public hazard if you need that one for your personal functions.
It would be funny for those ones standing around you, because you'll be there Michael Jackson without music, but it's just not healthy. Yeah, it's not recommended.
Oh my goodness. Michael Jackson.
I don't know why electricity does that, but has a way of putting Michael Jackson to everyone.
Makes people moonwalk, you
say. I know, right? Without the music.
Oh my goodness. Okay, look guys.
Look, the first time I was shocked was in high school. Yeah, it was in the laundry room. I think the socket, one of the sockets was trying to plug something into. I think there was a short circuit of some kind.
It might have been one of those live sockets.
My hands were also soaked, so that explains it.
You showed up with wet hands.
Yeah, I know there was no music, but
to an electric outlet.
There was no music, but you should have seen me in my boxers. That was it's a good thing there were no CCTV back then, because that video would make one entertaining, one heck of an entertainment for everyone else, but very embarrassing for me. So.
Actually, on a good note, next Friday, you can wish your favorite two public workers categories happy payday.
Oh yeah, that. Oh yeah. Did I point out just how wonderful you guys are and how awesome you are doing your jobs great. You're doing great. Anyone that says that teachers and police officers are not working.
Remember, that's still next week Friday. Don't worry, guys.
Oh yeah, that's it. No, I'm not criticizing.
We've logged you in.
Yeah. I'm not criticizing anyone anymore. One thing I've learned from Namibia's SOE is that when you criticize them for not working, they start working by investigating you.
Or they start investing, or they open up investment companies.
Oh no, they investigate you first. I know, been there, done that. Look, so no more criticizing SOEs. At least I've learned that, I didn't learn it the hard way. I learned it from a distance.
Mm.
Yeah. So let's talk energy. This is from the this is from the engagement, somewhat similar to what the to the topic that we had was that yesterday, where the Ministry of the Ministry of Gender was just trying to find out what other ministries are doing with regards to the combating of poverty.
Mm.
Yeah, the Natural Resources, the Natural Resources Committee also, he was trying to look at, what others are doing with regards to, what the respective entities are doing, especially those ones that are in the line of energy. Energy production.
Mm.
For Namibia, that's more like working towards the energy security of the Republic of Namibia. In the very same way that you have Ministry of Agriculture is working towards poverty eradication, and that's Ministry of Gender is doing the exact same thing. Now the Natural Resources Committee is looking into anyone that's working towards energy security in Namibia, like one of which is rural electrification. Sorry, Hangwena. Rural electrification, for example. What are they doing and how are they going about, working towards accomplishing that goal? And, in the audios you just shared, right? There were a lot of, projections and stats that I managed to pick up from there. And one of them is the service legal agreement that was availed was that was it earlier this year. The goal is to electrify, Namibia's goal in terms of, of electrification is to electrify 400,000, not people, households, by 2040.
Yeah.
400,000 households by 2040.
And kindly keep the 700,000 housing, either 300,000 housing backlog out of that specific discussion as well, Hamoud. Because one of the key things, I think it's the new executive director that made that comment, because he listed off a whole bunch of particular statistics and developments.
More like, projections. Yeah.
Yeah, and things that are in pipelines and things that are active or that come online in recent scenarios. For example, he made reference to the Anikas power plant that is a renewable energy power plant. It's predominantly, I almost said photovoltaic, but I want to use the layman's term.
Solar
panel. Yeah, it's a solar panel power plant.
Yeah.
Much of these particular discussions obviously speak towards the discussion in terms of what these two standing committees wanted to achieve. Okay. In one sense, they obviously know each other. Let's start from there. Let's start from there. So the chairman of the Standing Committee on Economy is former Finance Minister Ipumbu Shimi. The chairman of the Standing Committee on Natural Resources. Is, obviously he's an MP now in the National Assembly as well. That's obviously a member of Parliament, Toby Opindi. And they obviously did this in conjunction because you have a ministry that although it has industry now associated to it, but it's still mines and energy in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've obviously got the executive director of that ministry that presented some of those statistics that you wrote down. Actually, the listeners also heard this particular report yesterday, so we're just jogging their memory again. We still have the audios. We'll see where we can fit it in just for jogging memory's sake. The important thing that emanates from this is not the standing committee's Hamoud of last year, whose reports you and I have been dissecting since last year. People that in most cases were never ministers, even deputy ministers, mind you. They were never ministers. Or they probably never saw the insides of the inside offices or halls of where the literal execution of policy making or the policies that ministries develop technically get executed. Why am I saying that? You've got to look at the discussion here of, the engagement started off obviously from a setting where the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Economy, that being the former finance minister, Ipumbu Shimi, indicated this is a fact-finding mission. This is to understand from all these executives and representatives and executive directors of ministries, agencies, and offices, what is in the pipeline for the next 5 years. Now, this is where we get to the interesting side of things. Remember when I told you, Hamoud, just keep the 300,000 housing backlog to one side. Because obviously, Mr. Nangombe cited an ongoing plan of the National Electrification Project.
Yeah.
Now, that obviously also includes rural electrification.
Yeah.
Now, let me draw you a very lovely picture, Hamoud. It's not story time in this scenario, but it's more like an illustration that I'm doing. You know, when someone becomes an artist just through word, being a word weaver. If you have ever seen rural settings, let's say in countries like New Zealand, South America, Australia. Okay, South America is not a country, it's a continent. But the countries in South America. And you go look at their rural communities, small towns, villages and the likes.
I know, right?
Yeah. They are pretty similar to us in terms of that you have a great divide. You've got great divides that exist. There are people that have electricity and there are people that don't have electricity. In Australia's case, it's in many cases the indigenous community of the Aborigine. But they follow greatly their customs and cultures and traditions. And they believe in as less modernization as possible. What you actually see from this joint standing committee engagement with these offices, ministries and agencies is, it is the unspoken term that I've also touched on here on Eagle FM, but on the business and economic segment of modernization. Now, I remember, Helmut, you did a discussion about, just before I did that modernization discussion, you did a discussion in terms of the industrialization of Namibia back in last year, before we, you know, we joined up on the home run.
Yeah.
When you had that discussion, I came in into the studio after you to do the business and economic segment, and I had a discussion about modernization. Now, modernization, Helmut, is literally one of the first steps that takes place with the urban to rural migration setting. So for your industrialization to achieve the promised land that we are continuously searching for, it's literally our lost ark. You know, it's Indiana Jones and the lost ark scenarios here. So Namibia is continuously looking for this lost ark of industrialization, of optimum industrialization,
yeah,
which technically means everyone has factory jobs. But we have certain installations going already for us. It's a question of just connecting the dots. However, when you look at this goal that we want to achieve, and I came from a hydrogen monitor session just now, earlier this morning from IPPR, where, you know, the researchers were obviously, you remember Rosvita that came here last year on the home run regarding we did the discussion on cybersecurity.
Yeah.
It was her cybersecurity, and before that we had what's the lady's name? Jessica with the digital data protection, with the data protection discussion.
Yeah, the one who went on and on about the legislation just how sluggish everything is.
Yeah. Well, which is a very good point that she made, primarily because it shows to every Namibian in terms of the kinds of political leaders that we put in the National Assembly who can't finish, they can't complete in a 5-year cycle
like a data protection.
Yeah, they can't complete these things. Even the debates, they can't complete it. Helmut, the debate about the what's that thing regarding the joint declaration on the genocide? Mm. That debate is also not completed. Do you know that?
How long has that been going?
Remember, okay, let me just jog your memory there, just to set it in context of what I just said. That debate happened in 2022. Because when the document showed up, because the National Assembly kept demanding for this document since 2020 during COVID, but obviously, you know, because of COVID regulations and the likes, it could technically only show up in 2021.
Yeah.
That was now the negotiated document, and people were shouting, what is this document? The debate was supposed to go on from 2021 to 2022. And where the speaker, and that's the accusation that is laid in the court documents, that court case that ended last year, just before the elections, when the judge that heard that case in the pre-trial phase of things threw that case out. That case, remember, was brought on by LPM and the various traditional leaders, predominantly from the Nama Traditional Leaders Association, the NTLA, and then the Ovaherero Traditional Authority, the OTA. Because I still have the PDF document, when I read through, you know, parts of the filings, the document filings, what was cited there was that was a debate that was supposed to continue until a level of satisfaction. You know most about that thing. It's known as a reasonable level of satisfaction had been reached in terms of insights and inputs and debate and regarding certain points, you know, debating every aspect of the joint declaration. And then the speaker went, the former speaker just went and stopped the debates. And then the next week, it didn't return back to the floor for debating. I'm just setting the scene. So that discussion is not done as yet. You then, and then bringing you back now in the context where we are, like the debates, the discussions and the likes of the earlier statement that I made, specifically with the two, you know, guests that we had here last year, that being Rosvita and Jessica themselves, respectively, where you can see from one presidential cycle or term, it flows into another. But it's the same, in many cases, the same bills that don't get completed. Now, the data protection bill is based upon that you must first be collecting data, right?
Mm-hmm.
And remember when we had the particular discussion of data interoperability between agencies? That also now becomes another particular talking point. Because here's a serious point based upon this notion of where is this 400,000 households across the country that electricity infrastructure has to be installed for? Remember, ask yourself another key question. Who's carrying the burden for that installation? Is it the local authorities? Is it the regional authorities? Or is everything going to be dumped on NamPower?
Now, also consider, yeah. Consider something here. According to the recent NSA, you know, population census that we just got, what happened in comparison to the previous statistics that came out in 2011? There's something interesting, sort of like, you know, households.
Mm.
Yeah. And household, you know, people per household.
Yeah.
Sort of like, you know, the number switched. In the previous statistics, there were more people in households, but there were fewer households.
Yeah.
But in these statistics, there are few people per households. But the number of households seems to have ballooned.
Yeah.
So now, looking at it from that, if you have to factor in the factor also of rural to urban migration, then and you're also considering that people are going to be constantly moving from rural to urban. There are a lot of there are a lot of things to consider here, and one of those things, as you can imagine, is. Obviously, you have to factor in that we are not going to have the same number of households that we have today in 2030, and definitely we are not going to have the same number of households in 2040. These households, if anything, the number of households are also going to increase. So the numbers then I'm not a statistician, so I'm hoping the 400,000 households. Before 2040, the electrification of is, was also factored in. And I'm so glad that he also referenced the Mission 300 million.
Mm.
Yeah. The energy summit that was held. It was in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania earlier this year.
Mm.
Yeah. According to the African Development Bank, the Mission 300 energy summit, to gather Africa's leader and partners to transform the energy sector. But, here's the thing. This is all very nice on paper. But of course, the practicality is going to come with ups and downs. Obviously, you can, at least I would imagine the experts that did all this math also factored in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now. Pulling this off is going to be interesting to see. That's one. Two, this requires investments. That means it needs money. Are we going to go to, foreign investors to do that, or we are just going to do that ourselves? If we are going to do that now, I think there are a few references that were made. One was, the Kudu, is it gas to power project?
Mm.
Yeah. There's also a reference, in there. And, now this is a project that you and I at some point, we talked about it in reference to, I think we used, one of the sources that we used at that time was the Ministry of Mines and Energy's website, where it was a reference that this is an extractive, you know, an energy resource, well that we should have dipped in a very long time ago, but for some reasons we didn't because it's coming from the 70s.
And that it has just been lying dormant.
Yeah.
Amut, do you know that we actually technically could have, we could have been that, we could have had a export boom through that project. If that project was literally brought online.
If it was a priority from the get-go, but for some reason
it just was treated not like a priority for some reason. And it's limitless energy. Okay, not limitless. It is limited. But it's right there.
Yep. I know. And Kudu Power. We've been sitting with a source of energy. Again, this takes us to the Albania example. The Albanians looked at their country and look, I understand the whole investment and the whole, more like excitement with regards to the, with regards to oil. But again, the question that it's kind of very, I think, that's one can't just stop asking themselves is anyone at least that knows that the Kudu gas fields, we have known about these fields, so, from as far as the 70s. Yeah. And.
Namibians and their memes, ne?
Lord have mercy on our soul. Now, the question that I just can't. For some reason, basically for obvious reasons, because we want, one thing that was emphasized in these discussions is that we can't keep importing energy. And also one very important point that was made is no country has ever industrialized without having an affordable energy source.
Yep.
Yeah, because things are going to be very expensive if you have to export energy. Commercial break.
There's no price like the ShopRite price. That's why we're committed to bringing you lower prices on all the essentials you need. Like 2.5 kg Champion Super Maize Meal for only $32.99. And 500 grams Right Brand Medium Fat Bread Spread, only $9.99 each. Never pay more than the ShopRite price. Valid until 20 July 2025. Only at ShopRite.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Just a minute past the hour of 5, you just tuned in, you're listening to Mind the Gap with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Moving on.
You were still making the point before I showed you a meme.
Yeah, before you showed me a meme. It's home run, by the way.
A lot of memes fly here between us guys, don't worry.
The point I was trying to make is, I like the reference that was made with regards to imported energy and industrialization. Because if you are going to industrialize, you want to make sure that you build your industries around affordable energy. Because you are looking for affordable energy, not because out of greed or something like, although that gives you a lot of financial comfort. But also you want to create, you want to make sure that the products or services that you are producing are also affordable. Because if the energy is affordable, if the energy is expensive, that expensiveness is going to have to be carried by someone, and you definitely would not want to, you know, if you want your business to be sustainable and to run for a long time, you are going to have to push that cost to someone else, and that someone else has more often been the consumer.
Mm.
So if you're going to produce something that's based on exported energy, so, and because of transport and everything, or more like, even if you're not putting electricity in a bucket and then shipping it from one country to another, you have to use power lines. And anyone that has done simple physics knows that the longer the line, the higher the resistance. Obviously, all these things are factored into the price. And if it's factored into a price, that means whatever you're producing is going to be more, is going to cost more than it would be if you produced your own energy.
Yes. And here's another particular downside. Obviously, since we're talking about energy, and obviously since people from a certain energy company have been taking into custody, dear listeners,
uh-huh,
you have to understand...
Talk about a threat to energy security. But
no, that comes internally from us. That is the beauty of Namibians. You know, we go and speak loud and proud at international events,
mm-hmm,
and then one of the particular proponents of that are supposed to be the flag bearers of the energy sector literally now has got a little, it's not a little bit of a taint. It's an ugly smear of mud.
Let me put on my code words so that we don't get into trouble.
Oh, yeah.
At some point in the history of this country, there was a certain politician who was confronted by a foreign journalist with a video of himself, doing something legally questionable. And one of the things the foreign journalist said is, "You're here talking about transparency." And but, well, this is you in this video doing very not transparent things.
Well, you know, we're land of the brave, Helmut. There's a reason we've got that name.
That's not what it's was supposed to, brave as in liberate us, not drag us into financial,
you know, doldrums. Yeah, let's, I know, go, right? Let's go for doldrums.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So at the heart of this particular subject matter, we're obviously seeing that, okay, bear in mind, many Namibians now obviously will be fixated on these arrests that have taken place by the Anti-Corruption Commission.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, and I reiterate the statement continuously, nothing can happen in isolation, and nothing can sort of like continue, like as if it's at Disney World, without feeling any sort of reverberations, because the particular discussion regarding whether or not Namibia can literally, and this has been the biggest question since 2021, whether or not, 2022, when the oil was announced.
Yeah.
Whether or not trickle down economics will actually work. And we obviously see what it now starts looking like, because the interview I had back on Wednesday with the governance academic, that's now Professor Johan Kutsia, on the home run, when I asked him, is this a governance issue? And he said, 100% right. 100% this is a governance issue.
Governance issue.
This is about people who get into jobs in the state-owned enterprises, and they don't work for the national interest. They don't work for public
interest.
So they
get into public office and then remember,
this is SOE. This is SOE.
Yeah.
SOE, there's a fine line between public office at an SOE,
mm-hmm,
and being in the public office at a local authority or at a ministry.
Yeah.
Because on SOEs, guys, it seems like they don't understand what role they play.
Please explain, because my comedic mind is going wild.
Okay, let me give you the worst case example, and that's of a deputy minister, yeah, who's now the deputy minister of education. Remember that one of the other media houses ran a story about the pay decrease he had to take from going from NIPDP,
mm-hmm,
to being the deputy minister.
Yeah.
For you and me, that looked like a bump up. Just to realize it went from above 100,000,
mm-hmm,
that he was earning to well below that 100,000. Which many Namibians would be asking a question of. Now, that was an office that was close to the presidency under the former presidents.
Mm-hmm.
Now it will be now absorbed into, what's the ministry's name now? Into international relations. NIPD will move from that advisory position it had at the Ministry of the Presidency's office will now be moved down into the Ministry of International Relations. Since I used the word ministry twice for two different ministries, many people would think it's just shifting it from one to another. It's technically moving downwards.
Office of the President to...
Yeah, to international relations and trade.
Yeah.
Because that has also been the largest questions that many Namibians have been asking since 2020 when NIPDB was started. And last year, she was the former Minister of Trade, and she's the most now Minister of Home Affairs, Lucia Ibumbu. She went and tabled, remember, she went and tabled the, what was that bill's name? The Namibia, the promotion, trade and something promotion bill. You and I, we did that bill just here before the elections as well. She tabled that bill. That bill had a particular, section about how does NIPDB feature in, that bill, because that bill would have been under that ministry. But now we obviously see something that was submitted then by a ministry that does not exist anymore. Technically spells for any other discussions now for that bill to be brought back. Now, I still have to go check if anything had been signed or gazetted by the president at the start of this year or at the end of last year, so as to understand whether or not that bill had been signed off. Because if that bill had been signed off, it also makes it questionable in terms of under which ministry does that bill go and fall under? Because you'd probably go, okay, since NIPDB will now be in international relations, probably that bill and that particular act would be there, would be affiliated to international relations as roles. But here's the thing. That bill has a lot of industry associated to it. And the part of industry is now administrative of mines and energy.
Okay, but we have been, we have been shifting directorates and, absorbing sort of like a standalone SOEs into directorates and, splitting directorates into standalone, SOEs for a while now. So, okay, I would actually think we have worked out like a plan, like, if the next election cycle, the executive office or the executive branch, aka the president, decides to, to increase the number of ministries or reduce the number of ministries or take, or take an SOE and then put it under ministry as a directorate or take a directorate from a ministry and then put it, separate as a standalone SOE.
Yeah.
The transition, the smooth transition, in how to do it. But it seems like every time we do this, there's always a question of, okay, now what about, what happens to the programs that was run? What happens to the programs or the projects or the initiatives that was run by the previous,
ministry?
Yeah.
Let's take another good example. So these agencies, ministries and offices had to now brief these two joint standing committees. And I've indicated specifically now that more questions will now obviously pop up regarding Namibia's particular transparency around how to deal with large investment projects, specifically like energy projects. Mm-hmm. But we've obviously been seeing that we've got development partners that have our backs, They've got our backs, Unless onza gazis, they're our deep, deep, deep homies.
Right? I have one here for you.
Yeah. So, Germany is obviously helping us with this green hydrogen discussion. And obviously Qatar wants to be that particular development partner in the oil discussion. Technic also obviously, roping in the expertise from those international oil companies. But there's always the large skepticism that exists in the broader Namibian landscape. Because I will answer one particular question to you. Namibians have a lot of entitlement. And I'm sorry, many of our fellow Namibians would sit with a lot of entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
At that green hydrogen monitor earlier today, And I don't know if you know about this development. The one of the call for scholarships that are only meant for youth that come from the Hardap and Karas regions. You might have heard of that thing in this week or in last week.
I'm not sure I'm aware of that.
Okay. Yeah. So what it is the German government explicitly has told SASCAL and the other agency that has to do with this, the DAAD, which is also a German development agency, to source as many youth from Hardap and Karas only to participate in scholarships regarding green hydrogen projects, jobs, skills, capacity development, and the likes.
Yeah.
I will answer the why as to why they did that. The other why was that there was only supposed to be two rounds of this call to take place.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lady from this agency, SASCAL, that got up because there was another gentleman in the audience that asked, yeah, why is it only for these two regions? Why? When will it be opened up for the rest of the country?
Mm-hmm.
That lady got up and she said, but it was opened for the rest of the country. But the hope was that predominantly that most of the applications would be from those two regions where most of the green hydrogen projects would be contained and the largest development would be contained in, so that they directly benefit through local content policy. That's how you initiate the local content policy. They would be the first direct beneficiaries of the projects that are contained in their regions.
Yeah.
She noted that most of the applications for rounds 1 and 2 came from the rest of the country.
Not the two regions.
Not the two regions. There was only one application that came from the two regions in 2 years. One application.
Okay, why? Is it this the lack of applications or just as, you know, applications were submitted and a lot of them were lost in screening?
Here's one of the reasons that she supplied with. The unfortunate thing is, which is the education discussion you and I had the other day. Hence the reason why I said earlier in our talk, nothing in Namibia is unconnected.
It's an isolated incident.
Or happens in isolation. It has a knock-on effect. And we saw this knock-on effect. It's an outbreak.
Knock-on effect on the other side of the commercial break.
So, you've got everything sorted for tomorrow?
Yeah, man. Meat, spice, poikis ready. Even got some playlists lined up, bro.
And the crew? They're all coming, right?
Howie, everyone's in. It's gonna be lekker.
Wait. What about the tassies?
Bruh,
you can't get it without tassim. It's like cabana without salsa, dog. Tassim Burr. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
15 minutes past the hour of 5. Welcome back to Home Run.
And isolation.
Yeah.
Knock-on effects. So, because the unfortunate thing is, Helmut, here, in our year and a half now so far of doing the Home Run, we've pretty much illustrated it pretty well to our listeners. Nothing happens in silos. Nothing. Even these recent arrests of this week, the knock-on effects will start manifesting. What we see, or what was indicated, was that the woman from SASCAL explained that unfortunately the requirement discussion was based upon a certain level of marks and education requirements that had to be met. And it factored in, it literally answered one particular dimension in our education discussion you and I had a little bit earlier back in the month of June. Remember the
statistics?
The striking teachers.
The striking teachers, yeah.
Yeah. And that the same day when the striking teachers, were demanding things, the ministry brought out that statement that you and I also went through, where we uncovered technically and highlighted to the listeners as well, that there's an oversupply of primary school teachers and an undersupply, and specifically also in the language groups, there's an undersupply of teachers in those language groups in high school. And then there was also what the ministry cited, urban to rural, rural to urban migration by teachers, because the teachers don't want to be.
They want everyone wants the convenience of of the urban area.
Yeah. And where was Minister Steenkamp at the same time that event
was? She was in the south.
She was in the south. And what was she doing? She was meeting with the former governor, Aletta Frederick, talking to the education, colleagues in the region as to why, what? Teachers.
You all are taking too many leaves.
Too much leave. Teachers in the Karas region had high statistics of leave. High statistics of leave. Now, when a teacher is on leave, the question obviously means, and you know what happens in a school, who can stand in for that teacher? You know, to get the lessons done that are needed. And in many cases, there's no such mechanism available because all the other teachers are overloaded with their loads. So what happens? Those unfortunate kids miss out on time of being taught. Sometimes they turn to their own, you know, eccentric behaviors, and we've all been there.
Yeah.
We've all been there. So I can't throw shade.
We like to pretend.
I cannot throw shade. I've been in those settings. Not saying that I actually was the front runner or the leader of the pack. Just saying I know what it looks like. You know, when you give teenagers a free period.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. If you give them a free period, they will swallow the whole chop. You were just supposed to give them just a little teaser, an appetizer of what it tastes like. Freedom, partial educational freedom. They go and swallow the whole chop down. So you see partly what some of the problems, the structural problems are in the Karas region and in the Hartab region. But even though it comes from the Karas region, there were teachers with too much leave, or teachers that were taking too much leave days in that region. Now, that could potentially explain one thing. It could potentially. We still don't know, Helmut, what is the level of literacy across the country? How up to date is that statistic? Because I watched a video yesterday of an academic from the US where he tried to talk about American literacy, America's literacy rate, where many academics believe it's at such low levels in 2025. There are many Americans that can be literally deemed functional illiterates. They can read. They just don't know what they're reading. Some of them, in terms of the kids, don't even know how to read by the certain age groups. And they're allowed to function in the broader societies and the economies of that country. Now, that is a discussion that was hosted by a YouTuber on YouTube in his video as an academic. But it makes you so frightened as to ask a question this side in Namibia. Now, since Minister Steenkamp went and accosted means you literally, you know, it's that thing that the asset forfeiture departments do to you, you know, they rough you up a little bit. Where Minister Steenkamp had that engagement with the former governor of Karas and those education officials regarding those leave stats, you beg to ask a question of, now what's happening in the other regions? And then we did that other particular report. Remember the Hubli report, Helmut?
Yeah.
About the behavior of some learners and students on schools, where some teachers are afraid of dealing with such learners.
Yeah, and some learners were like, we like it. It helps us concentrate, and quite a lot of reasons were given.
Yeah, which also...
And some of them, even the parents, are aware that they are taking the substances.
Which also helps to explain that of whether or not Namibia technically also has an underlying substance abuse issue. Do you see the multi-layered problems in terms of the future workers that Namibia wants to train, which helps to explain why the German government literally told these agencies, you are just going to focus on people that come from these two regions.
Now, substance abuse and industries like green hydrogen don't go hand in hand.
They don't. Okay. No, you definitely don't want nuclear bombs setting off on the coast.
Yeah, because it's going to go off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you definitely don't want no nuclear bombs. Another particular dimension that also feeds into this discussion. And I know we've literally drifted so far away from that joint standing committee engagement, but it's literally what feeds into that joint standing committee engagement's work.
Look at it this way. The goal here is to achieve energy security. Now, this is energy security, since one thing that was covered in the engagement is that we don't want to export energy. We also, so that, yeah, we don't want to import. We definitely want to export, but we don't want to import.
Yeah.
We want to sell it, but we don't want to buy most of it in this, you know, at least not at the rate that we are doing right now.
Yeah.
So, that means, if we don't want to, you know, if we want to have the security in terms of producing it, we also, you know, that takes you back to skills. Yeah. You want to upskill Namibians to work in all the infrastructures that you're planning on setting up to produce this energy. Otherwise, then you will be producing and exporting energy, but you will be importing the people that work in the infrastructure,
yep.
Which again is something that you want to avoid. So, like you can see with what the German government is doing with regards to the green hydrogen, they want to make sure, they are investing. And that's the part that we always miss, you know, every time we talk about these things. We want to, you know, everything is going to require investment.
Mm.
Everything is going to require you putting money into that something for it to be, you know, for it to work out. Can't believe we understand that about weddings, but when it comes to, you know, things that produce money, we think that it's going to be Hail Mary situation.
Or that it's going to be manna from the heavens.
Yeah, you know, just cross your fingers and hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. But boy, when it comes to weddings, we plan everything from the beginning to the end. If weddings produced any economic value, boy, oh boy. It does in the event of any divorce, I mean, for one partner.
Technically in the accumulation of assets in that wedding.
Yeah.
That's why economic systems around the world are slightly skewed, because now you've got a great more amount of people that are single, but they are being measured based upon a household scenario. No, Helmut, yeah. In macro and micro economics, there literally is a model based upon the household. Now, does a single person count as a household? Let's say you become a successful celebrity and entrepreneur through entertainment work, and you don't marry, but you bought a house, you have cars, you pay your taxes yourself and all your stuff, but you're a single person. You're not married. There's no one living in the house with you. It's just you. Do you count as a household?
Yeah.
Even though you make that much money? But then what does the picture look like the opposite?
So what constitutes a household?
Is it husband, wife, and children that obviously accumulate assets and incomes? Because the newer kinds of household scenarios or characteristics is also that in most cases, yes, you would find married couples, but then they both have jobs. They split a lot of the financial requirements between themselves. The one on the one side, that usually it's the husband that has to carry a lot of the heavy, financial commitments.
Yeah.
So let's say in the event of a car or in the event of purchasing a house or property, it falls in most cases on the husband's salary. And then the wife's salary is there for paying the water and electricity, the rates, the other particular requirements.
Mostly the kitchen, because
buying the groceries, like you said. And then there's like a small amount of money for like the miscellaneous requirements, like petrol every week and just ensuring that you've got airtime on your phone going and stuff like that. Don't worry, I always sit there observing my brothers. I know I can't mention their names, but
hang on a second. So, interesting. And I have two cousins that are married. One of them, at some point when I paid them a visit, was making fun of a husband that when I met that guy, he only had one fork, one tablespoon, and one cup, and one plate. The question that she was basically asking...
she made him a human.
Yeah. How do you guys survive on the, you know...
No, we function.
Like, what are you talking about?
We function.
We ask ourselves the same question about you guys. Why do you need 15 plates?
Yeah. 10,000 things.
Why? This is just the two of us in the house. And he's like, well, what about visitors? I'm like, well, the reason why they're staying longer is because you have plates. Yeah. Just have one so they can keep have eating one cup on their hands so, they can leave the next day.
Have one cup so that you know that all they do is ask for water.
Yeah. Yeah. So they can leave the next day.
What? You've got guests that want to sleep over?
Are you kidding me? I'm going to give them direction to guest house.
No, Helmut. You only entertain family. If it's friends and other people's.
A guest that's sleeping over.
Hey, you better just sleep.
Okay.
And brush your teeth.
And actually, I'm the one that's sleeping over the guest. But the point I'm trying to make here is that went south really fast.
Oh my goodness, that's the only guest
I'm tolerating for
sleep. Guys, you have to give us, you know, what do you call it? You have to excuse us. This is a Friday. This is sometimes what happens.
And So back to energy that doesn't involve, you know,
having to talk about guests.
Yeah. Because we have moved into the category of special guests now at this point.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of financial responsibilities that financial responsibility split that we see in a lot of couples today, it's influenced by culture.
Mm.
Yeah. So women are most likely going to prioritize, especially what the house looks like, curtains.
Yeah.
I'm yet to run into a bunch of guys that are going like, what type of curtains do you think we have to buy?
We don't care. You know, do you know what will even sort our lives out?
Huh?
If the house comes with blinds.
Thank you.
If it comes with these things in the studio.
With blinds, whoo, hallelujah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
okay. There's also some of us guys that sleep with windows open.
Look,
it's just you. Okay, you and a few other guys.
Yeah.
I don't open the windows.
I can't sleep with windows closed.
No, I open up my door so that I can get fresh air from the rest of, the dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of closing the door and opening the windows.
No, the door is the one I lock. It's a lot.
I understand.
Yeah, look, the last thing I want is for, for a bunch of guys to break into the house and then
they find themselves in your room.
Yeah, so they're just waking up. Buddy, can we have the TV?
I like your sneakers.
By the way, this bed, please get out. Let's take a commercial.
That iconic taste of Heineken. Loved in Germany. Amsterdam. Argentina and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken. Loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing thirst. Only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo igel FM otuna evi toda njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatu imwe bari heari, nola natu heari bari no heari. Ileko derewa, nora etatu natu, bari o etatu watatu, o mafilane Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news, Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. It's 28 minutes left to the hour of six. So let's come back to the energy discussion. So I think if you are going to if you are going to plan on being in energy independent, that production of that energy, obviously, before you talk about infrastructure, you have to start talking about skills.
Yeah,
and those skills takes you from the Ministry of Energy, where you're talking about energy, to, as we have, gravitated to the Ministry of Education, because that's where the skills are empowered from. Whether this is academics, if you're talking about specialized aspects of that energy production, or the technical aspect of it's more where you will need technicians. That's where, institutions like NDA now comes in. It's one of those things that takes you, shows you just how talking about one industry leads you into, the conversation of talking about one industry, or more like one ministry, spills over into different ministries. Because although the Ministry of Mines and Energy has the mandate of ensuring the energy security of the country, empowering those people, puts them on the road that spills over into the Ministry of Education. On our development partners. On our development partners discussion. You're gonna love this part. Earlier this year, the head of African leaders met in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and that was in January.
Mm.
Yeah, and one thing that they pointed out was they called the summit Mission 300, and according to the African Development Bank, Mission 300 is an unprecedented collaboration between the African Development Bank and the World Bank Group, and the global partners to address Africa's electricity access gap using technology and innovative financing. Nearly 600 million Africans lack electricity, which is crucial for development and job creation. So when I came across this, I remembered what you said the other day, that AfriExim Bank is also, African Development Bank. Is it African Development Bank that also partly owns AfriExim Bank?
And who owns Africa Development Bank? The AU. And who funds the AU? Much of our development partners, because what is that weird report that I've discovered on that website, that AU website? It was based upon the problem with financing internally. Remember, I sent you the report. Actually, yeah, we never spoke about that thing, Helmut.
Oh, dear Lord.
We never spoke about that financing issue.
Hang on a second. I think to some degree,
not entirely, on its own.
I remember, I think you were on leave when, I was talking about, the African Development and African Development Bank and AfriExim Bank coming together to come up with the Africa Energy Bank.
I
remember outlining the reasons why the two institutions decided, they're all banks, interesting enough, decided to form a bank that's entirely dedicated to financing energy initiatives on the African continent. Now, the reason behind that was, at least the one that they stated was that, they want to fund, they came up with that, with that source of financing, because when you are dealing with financial institutions like the World Bank, among other non-African, more like, developed countries, especially those ones financial institutions coming out of the West, they are more reluctant to financing energy initiatives that are non-green, like like petroleum-oriented, for example. So they will, but they will jump to an opportunity of financing a green initiative, energy initiative type. So they came up with the Africa Energy Bank, so that it can Africans that want to venture into any type of energy initiative, be it green or non-green, they can just have any source of funding without jumping through hoops. So that's why when I came across this, I was like, okay, so the African Development Bank, the guys that partnered up with the Afri Exim Bank, and to come up with the what's this?
African Energy.
Yeah, African Energy Bank. Have now partnered up with the World Bank Group.
Yeah. But first wait, Helmut. What did they say there about where does the money come from?
On this one?
Yeah.
This is what the African Development Bank says. The African Development Bank website says, the Mission 300 is an unprecedented collaboration between African Development Bank, World Bank. It doesn't say anything specifically about the money. World Bank, and when the World Bank Group, and this World Bank Group, under which you find World Bank.
Yeah.
World Bank and the global partners to address electricity. So the World Bank is mostly going to be involved in terms of, the financial aspect of things. And then you have, public office guys in Africa who will be involved in the, ChatGPT speech aspect of things.
Yes, they will be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so and then they point out the level of of electrification problem that we have to deal with. They are looking at 600 million, nearly 600 million Africans, not African households, Africans. Yeah, so 600 million Africans lack electricity, which is crucial for development and job creation. So I find it interesting that we have disagreements here and there, but then when it comes to the Mission 300 discussion, we decided let's work together. Albeit in the collabo between Afri Exim Bank and the African Development Bank, coming up with the Africa Energy Bank, they did not explicitly say, when Africans that want to invest into energy initiatives that are non-green approach the World Bank for money, the World Bank tells them, unless your energy initiative, is green, we're not giving you money. They didn't say that. They just pointed out that they came up with the African Energy Bank because they have a problem sourcing, getting, non-green energy initiative, sources of financing when it comes to external sources of funding, external aka outside of Africa sources of funding.
Yeah.
Of which most of them, like you just pointed out, most of our funding, especially development wise, again, part of the development goals that we want to reach is energy security. Most of our, development partners are coming out of the Western world, especially the EU.
Which makes things weird and murky.
Yep.
Reason why I mentioned the discussion upon the AU's ability to fund itself is, okay, so we keep bringing up wonderful initiatives, but when it comes to the money, who's
going to pay for it?
Whose money are we using? And then you get the very weird thing.
That's not the only irony.
Well, okay, I have to keep this particular subject matter out of our talk for today because we might have to talk about it on Monday. It's these African leaders that went to Washington.
Oh, yeah, the one who was congratulated for speaking very good English.
No, there's something worse that came out of it. But I will hold it back for our discussion on Monday. So we can dissect it.
No, when I just saw Gabon on that list, I'm like, oh, no, we cooked. But...
Do you know how big Gabon is, bruh? It's Comas region.
Yeah, Gabon. I know Gabon can fit in your pocket. It's also... look, this whole thing comes down, especially when it comes to Africa. All the problems are going to be coming down to leadership.
Yeah.
And I'm saying leadership because when you... I'm all for merit, guys. But a lot of questions are going to be raised when you are, the father is the president, the vice president is the son, the minister of defense is the uncle, the minister of education is the minister of education is the president's wife.
Yeah.
Like, obviously questions are going to pop up. You can answer them, but you better have very good answers, because whether you like it or not, those questions are going to come. But that's what we're dealing with, especially when it comes to the African continent. It's all going to boil down to just how transparent is the leadership. And more often, I know, you know, this is one of the reasons why I, you know, tap myself on the shoulder every time I look at my ID and go like, well, I find myself in Namibia. We don't have a perfect, you know, we don't have it, you know, rosy perfect type, because no country has that level of leadership and no country has that type of leadership. But when I compare it to what goes on in a lot of countries, I go, yeah, man, we have it better.
Yeah, we do.
Way better.
Even though in our scenario, it looks like, some more particular problems might be coming out. I mean, that governance discussion I had on Wednesday probably, you know, keeps on resonating.
I know.
Hence the reason why that EITI and open contracting conversation was important that we had last year. I think we need to have that one again, because my goodness. So in this broader sense, Helmut, the discussion of self-sustainability starts shouting ever more louder, because the ever more louder shout means that there must be a force that is resilient and literally works. For example, like education needs to pay off, because to me, it doesn't make sense, ne? And I know I might sound like someone, yes, that probably might be flaunting a lot of privilege in many directions, but there's also certain particular things that I wish I also had a little bit more than, that I saw in other households. If you've got teachers, for example, that don't play ball, who don't want to do their work, that's your first issue. If you've got households that they have children that are problem children, but they don't report or seek help from the psychosocial sector of Namibia, that's your second problem. You merge those two together, that itself gives you a third problem, because then you've got things like delinquency taking place on your schools. And many Namibians have not heard of this discussion, but in many cases you might have heard of the word of juvenile behavior, which is criminal minors or youngsters under a specific age limit who are acting criminal in many cases.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes for Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's 24 minutes left to the hour of 6. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, Juvenile Delinquents.
So, this is the foundation of your society, of your perceived nation that you want to build. To go and talk in an abstract scenario, Helmut, what energy projects are happening? does not really reflect whether or not the Namibian that you will build that energy project for might participate in it, might have a role in it, might have a stake in it. All they know is they'll have to pay for the electricity bill in many cases, which helps to ask the particular question that exists out there. Are we building an economy for the sectors, or are we building an economy for the people? Remember the chairperson, former minister, Shimi.
Yeah.
He said that particular sentence. He made that particular, I just not sure if it's him or if it's the chairperson, Aupindi, that made that statement. Whether or not a sector, the economy is being built for Namibians, or is it being built for the sectors?
Is that the part where, where he referenced how expensive the energy is right now for the, for the average consumer?
Yeah. So, there's also a little bit of a debate that you can throw out there, Hamid, about the cost scenario. Because something might be cheap for me, but it might not be cheap for you.
Yeah.
But I buy the thing, and you probably just go like, no, it's not in my budget parameter. And I find an alternative way. And when it comes to electricity, everyone needs it. So you would still highlight, it still doesn't meet my budget. And in my scenario, I would go like, I don't see it as an issue, because I count it as something that's always there. It's a constant. Now we've got Namibians that think that way. But here's the thing. And this is actually where I believe where, firstly, the national electrification discussion would have been achieved a lot earlier if that Kudu gas to power plant came online.
Thank you.
The reason why I say that, Helmut, is like you already alluded to a little bit earlier, is it would have supplemented. It would have played a major supplementary role.
Is it possible we just had an investment problem in a way that, because if it seems like to me like we have set a very terrible precedent of having something and then waiting for someone to come and fund it and then hand it over to us on a silver platter.
But you do remember what happened when you and I discussed that project last year. The private sector joint venture partner with NamPower. Yeah, BW Energy. What did they say? They went and said literally in a statement, they will push the launch of the event, or the launch of the of this initiative, into the new year in 2025 from 2024. Promises were made nationwide that this thing would come online by the end of 2024, before the elections. Just for that company to go and announce, they're pushing it out, the launch of the particular event, into 2025. So if you're asking a question about investment commitment, I don't think that's investment commitment. That's a whole different game of just trying to see what will be the landscape in Namibia.
See, I'm bringing up the investment commitment discussion because, again, of... Because of the uproar, I still go back to those articles and read them. The uproar that came out of President Gengob's statement of legally the oil is not ours. If you have not just looked at the amount of investment that goes into exploring for oil, it's very easy to say, well, the natural resources is ours. So, if it's on our land, it's ours. But here's the thing. You were not 100% certain it was there. Someone had to spend money into finding out that it's 100%
for you first,
there. Yeah. So they basically took that risk. Yeah. So, I think that's where the, that's where the legally part now comes in, President Gengob's statement of legally the oil is not ours. Because, assuming is one thing, but that's not what they do in the world of investment. But now, but you find it, you can easily say that, there's a lot of assuming that's done in exploration stage.
Of course.
But that's the most expensive assuming.
And it's the one that is based, that is known as a calculated risk.
Yeah.
Why? Because they have seen something in that, what's that survey's name?
Seismic.
In that seismic survey.
Yeah.
Because remember, a seismic survey is not you drilling a hole to see whether or not the thing is there.
Nope.
Seismic survey is like you've got a drone or something.
You're just using some wave technology of some type.
That uses radar to go and scope something. And then it comes back with the data and then like, you know what? There's a cavity there. And that cavity reflects that there's a presence or a mass there.
But we're not sure, so we have to bring in all these machines to...
It has to come from Norway. It has to come from...
South Korea.
From South Korea. It has to come from Japan. And then these guys come along.
The translation... out of that whole uproar, the very simple... that translates to me that we like to own the resources that's on our land.
Of course.
That's reasonable.
We like looking at it without ever seeing it.
I'm Namibian and I really love the ownership of everything that we have on our land. But here's the thing. What the world of investment is basically telling us that if you want to own it, you have got to first of all spend money into looking for it.
Yeah.
So that when you find it, it's yours. And then you fork out money to pay the, to pay for the infrastructure that's going to drill it. And the infrastructure, aka, oil tankers that's going to transport it.
Mm.
You have to invest into all these things. But, from what I see, especially on the African continent, we don't do all these things. But then again, I point a lot of fingers in the political direction because we say a lot of things without explaining it in detail. We discovered oil. Did we?
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
But we had the gas. But we also didn't discover the gas.
Because that's coming from the 70s.
Because the South Africans discovered it for us.
One, let's just be honest with ourselves here. We didn't discover the oil.
We didn't.
Nope. Private entities coming out of the Middle East and the West, spend a lot of money, seismic surveys, which sets you according to Mr. Sheban in Introduction to Namibian Economy, 300 million.
Yep. A pop.
You are not sure. You are just trying to find out if there is
something. It's 300 million a pop.
300 million a pop. Now,
and this pop, is per company doing a seismic survey.
Yeah.
So it's not 300 million every time one company does it.
No. And here's the thing. At this point, we are more like, drilling for samples for examination, for further examination. You can do that if it's offshore. It's about 200 kilometers offshore. To do that, you need an oil rig.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from the time that you tow that thing for whoever you get, and I think we are using one for the Portuguese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gulp.
Yeah. You'll have to tow that thing from wherever you're getting it. And there are not a lot of ships that can tow that thing. And you are being charged per day from the time that you tow it from wherever you're getting it to the day that you install it.
Yeah.
We're talking about millions
per day.
Now you understand.
No, at the end of a month, millions at the end of a month.
Now you understand why every nation's leader is going like, yeah, I know I'm doing that. I need private sector on this one. Yeah. So, again, you can own it if you can invest in it. It's kind of, it doesn't make a lot of economic sense for you to, for someone to come and invest money into something and then the next day you want to call it yours, especially after you, the previous owner, gave the permission for the said investor to invest in it. It doesn't make any, it doesn't make any economic sense. Take, for example, if any Namibian SOE, spent a lot of money into exploring for oil in Nigeria, when they find the oil, the Nigerian government is like, well, thank you very much for all the money that you have put in this. And by the way, we know that's your taxpayers' money.
Mm.
But we're going to take it from here. Every Namibian will go like, oh, what the heck?
Yeah.
Well, we paid for the initial investment exploration. What do you mean it's yours? Now, the fact that it's still giving a lot of Namibians a headache actually gives me a headache. Now, the kudu gas, on the other hand, if you ask me, should have been, especially every time that we talk about energy security, every time that we talk about energy security, I can't help but ask myself one question. Why didn't we prioritize the kudu gas as a main energy source of, more like invest a lot of money into it so that we can basically, electrify the whole country? Rural electrification check. Because if you look at, this is the painful thing about the African continent now. If you look at, most of the investments, most of the projects that are being, if you look at most of the projects taking place across the continent, the people that talks about these projects a lot are politicians.
Mm.
The people that funds them
are not politicians.
Are private sectors that are working in connection with private entities coming out of China, Russia, EU, and all these countries. But here's the thing. When we write our political speeches and we factor in all these projects, we make it sound like we have 100% ownership. And then we wonder why people get super pissed off when they wake up the next day and find out that, 90% of this institution belongs to this company that's having an operating company in that country, a holding company in that country, and the headquarters is in a different country. The bottom line is, if we want to own something, we have got to learn to invest in it. Otherwise, then whoever is going to invest in it is obviously going to claim ownership. That sounds very simple to me.
It is. It is usually the example I used yesterday. The boy that we all played with that owned the football in the street football scenario. He's the ref. He's the best manager. He's usually also sort of like the guy that knows when to organize the matches, and he's the final boss.
Yep.
You might not like him, but he doesn't care. He owns the ball.
If their team is losing.
Yeah. Then that match gets stopped abruptly, and he declares him and his teammates the winners. Or they start accusing you guys of rampant corruption, even though you're not the ref.
You know, that example of, the boy, young boy who's the owner of the ball in street football, just that there's a lot of psychological observation you can make from that with regards to how people use power.
Yeah, and when they know it. Kakuna enda to dripe to didrife on that ya shop right. Otripa kabo okupetera enda to otata diwa parere e mumbeto e gashi e kilograma dirim bashi mwanu nano. Tofira wo pakamo champion super maize meal. Toko shashi ke e dora diri o milonga na tu nambari ifinga yo wai ne senda diro wai. Nenge urando ka to pike kilograma diro maserata no correct brand medium fat spread. Koku tura komboro to ke dora diro wai ifinga yo wai ne senda diro wai adike. Ino futi kwa shiapu se durife on that ya shop right. Enda to edi o diriko fiyo mafiko milonga mbali ajuli o kosho right kaku.
Super bargains await you at USAVE, where you pay for the product and not the brand. Pay only $26.99 for 400 ml of Dawn hand and body cream, $36.99 for 1 kilo of Mama's washing powder, 750 ml Captain dishwashing liquid costs only $18.99 at USAVE, and large Sona bath soap just $12.99. USAVE, we all save at USAVE.
So, let's walk through the most painful part of ownership again. But before we do, let me go through the World Bank statement again. Not the African Development Bank statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mission 300, which the goal is to electrify the unelectrified parts of Africa. Yeah, Mission 300 is unprecedented collaboration between the African Development Bank, World Bank Group, and the global partners to address Africa's electricity access gap using new technology and innovative financing. Just look into the ownership of this, of these institutions. World Bank, that's a very simple one. That's a, a Bretton Woods institution. Mm. Yeah, it's a Western institution. African Development Bank. It's a bank of who? The AU.
Yeah.
Now, and then when you look at into most of the financing that the AU gets, they are not coming out of Africa. Most of the finance that the AU gets are coming outside of Africa. So that means whoever is paying for those projects is most likely going to have a lot of a louder voice compared to you that is not paying.
Yeah, that's...
So it all boils down to the money. I know what will, I mean, constitution, section, article 100, yes, but let's face it, the money.
The money is
always... I know it's painful.
Yeah, it's the only thing that speaks here. And that's one of the particular downsides as to why it helps to simplify the discussion around development. Because in development, you can see what is the need and you can see who can meet the need or who can do something that works on the need. Now, we obviously saw, and the listeners heard in yesterday's On the Radar, the functionaries of the state can meet needs of the everyday Namibian.
Yeah.
But how do they meet that need? Because how that need is met, Helmut, is an avenue of, does it mean that the state has to go and issue more bonds in the financial sector, which is the sector Namibians don't see? Because Namibians, all they will know here is at the budget discussions or later in this financial year of the state, is that bonds have to be issued. Because there's obviously a shortfall of what money they budgeted for that they can use. And in many cases, as it has happened since COVID 2020, is that the state or Ministry of Finance assesses what are the budgetary obligations that they can meet. And then they realize, oh my goodness, we've got a cash flow issue. And then they go and float a couple of more bonds on the market while they are still paying off other bonds. So when Namibians sit and think about this discussion and that document, you and I went through the 1,000-page medium-term expenditure framework document, which is now 1,000 pages. It went up from 500 last year to 1,000 this year.
Next year is going to be...
No, it'll be 3 years from now. Remember that document was 3 years old.
Yeah, the one for last year ended...
will end in this year.
It will end this year.
No, it'll end in next year, 2026.
Wait, what?
Yeah. That 500-page one will end.
So the 1,500 one will run for until 2030.
I think it's 2028 or 2029. The one that you and I reviewed.
Look, on the bright side is,
we are funding most of the
funding that's going to these developmental projects is coming from internally.
Here's the downside.
But on the AU level, that's painful, dude. Seeing that less than 40% of countries contribute.
Let me explain another discussion also to you, Helmut. Yeah. Remember this is another dimension that stays over for our discussion. Because a resource is not just about a thing that comes out of the ground. Energy is not just a thing that is meant to power your house.
Mm-hmm.
You also have to ask energy in terms of other aspects of your economy, because, and this is the beauty of a conversation that technically began yesterday with the city of Ntougais, which you and I obviously will also look at, was a discussion of, how can you, remove the burden of certain particular things in Namibia from the everyday Namibian.
Mm-hmm.
Transport is one of the biggest burdens in this country. Transport is not just separate from switching on a light bulb. Transport is not just separate from being able to say, hey, listen, since you now built your house, you are connected to the grid. No. Transport also has a need from the electricity grid.
Mm-hmm.
Because for all this green and smart talking and smart transport and smart everything that people are now using as buzz terms and buzzwords, yeah, how are you going to get there? Because you can't just use a word for the sake of sounding hip and in the groove and up to date with up to date with the Gen Zs, you know? No, the Gen Zs will ask you, okay, you're trying to act cool, but cringe, but you know. How are you going to do it? And if you tell them, go ride a bicycle, they go like, in Windhoek, are you mad? Firstly, the asset forfeitures will chase you down pretty quickly.
Yeah, take your bicycle. Secondly,
Windhoek's hills will in no time convert you into a Lance Armstrong yourself with, you know, thunder thighs and super calf muscles because, yeah, and obviously also the, you know, the body odor and sweating scenario. But yeah. Going to work, yeah, or to school.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not easy. It is really not easy. So when we look at the energy discussion, like this particular scenario,
mm-hmm.
I am glad that decision makers in the public sector now realize that you can't just approach having the ability of switching on that switch in a house or in a room or in an office is the only discussion of energy. It also factors onto how it literally has positive knock-on effects. And even though Nampower and City of Windhoek and the ECB can do all their spreadsheets and discussions, there are still Namibians that will come out and say, it is expensive for me to buy electricity. $100 does not give me 100 units worth of money. It gives me 60 units worth of value, which is $40 less than what you wish. But then that's an inflation discussion. That's a monetary depreciation discussion. That's got nothing to do with the guy producing it's got everything to do with that guy because that guy realizes there's an issue with money.
You also have to, I think it's also when you look at what things are considered, all the things that are considered before setting up the price, because obviously expenses of whoever is producing the, you know, producing the product, they're all going to be shoved into the price. until Monday from me.
And until Sunday for me.
Same time, same place.
And enjoy the rest of your programming in our company, guys. Obviously, this is a Friday. We look forward to all the public servants next Friday. You know what? Do your best, guys, in this last week.
Have a wonderful weekend, guys.
Spur on the consumption as much as possible.
Yeah.
You know?
No, and...
on the good behavior side of life. I'm not talking about the lawlessness and others. You know,
Knock-on effect, if there are any, you know, social knock-on effects created by the guys that's been arrested, a.k.a. the headache, and borrowed to somewhere who now have to pay their own rent. Until Monday, ladies and gentlemen, until Monday, you'll have to...
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia, on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.